While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and today is Wednesday. That is the 18th of March, 2026. Now, as we move further into the week, we appreciate you taking the time to join us for another edition of the program where we track, unpack, and make sense of the stories shaping our country and the world around us. Now, this afternoon, we continue to follow key developments across Namibia. That is from economic shifts and governance matters to innovation, youth development, and emerging opportunities. Now, these are the issues that are not only dominating headlines, but also directly affecting how individuals, how businesses, and our communities navigate their everyday lives. Now, over the next 90 minutes, we'll bring you a deeper look into the decisions, the trends, and the events influencing national progress and regional dynamics. Now, focus remains on providing clarity, going beyond surface level reporting to explore what those developments actually mean in practical terminology, both now and in the near future. Now, in a rapidly changing environment, staying informed is more important than ever. Through this platform, we aim to connect you with reliable information, thoughtful analysis, and conversations that do matter. So wherever you're listening from this afternoon, whether in Rudwitz, Gobabis, Okanja, Otapi, Karasburg, or Opoor, or perhaps right here in the capital city of Namibia, that is Windhoek, thank you for being part of the conversation. This right here is On The Radar on Eagle FM, keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the issues shaping our nation. And let's get right into these conversations. The importance of long-term planning and visionary leadership took center stage at the launch of the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development's Ministerial Strategic Plan, as Minister James Sankwasa Minister Sankwasa James urged stakeholders to move beyond short-term solutions and focus on sustainable national growth. Now, speaking at the event, Sankwasa highlighted a key weakness in many development plans, noting that they often prioritize immediate needs such as roads, clinics, and water points, while neglecting a broader long-term vision. Now, quoting from page 30 of the ministry's strategic plan document, he emphasized that every five-year plan should incorporate long-term components essential for building a prosperous, productive, and sustainable society. Now, the minister cautioned against short-sightedness and called on ministry staff to critically assess their contributions toward achieving the objectives of Vision 2030, also noting that there are only 4 years to Vision 2030. He retaliated the national goal that by 2030, Namibia should be an industrialized and prosperous nation driven by its own resources and characterized by peace, harmony, and political stability. Sankwasa said the newly launched strategic plan would serve as a roadmap to help the ministry address key development challenges in a structured and effective manner. Now, this includes sustainable human settlement development, improved governance, enhanced public service delivery, and balanced regional and rural development. He further urged all stakeholders to take ownership of the plan and ensure that available resources are used efficiently. In addition, the minister stressed the importance of involving political leaders in policy development processes in order to provide clear direction and guidance. The launch marks a renewed commitment by the ministry to align its efforts with Namibia's long-term development vision while addressing pressing social economic needs. Now let's take a listen to Minister James Sankwasa.
I'm not involved had a launch, it means this plan will not be implemented because it becomes irrelevant to them. Without energy's director of proceedings, I must register my honor and privilege. This strategic plan represents an important milestone in our collective efforts to advance inclusive government. That's where I'm coming in with all stakeholders of the ministry to be inclusive, balanced development and sustainable community across our country. This launch is not merely the unveiling of a well-written document, but rather a presentation of a renewed national commitment to strengthening regional and local governments, promoting equitable development and improving the quality of life for all Namibians. Whether they reside in urban centers, rural villages, or emerging settlements, this is where local governance comes in handy, and it must be strengthened. Because it's that level that has got the Namibian people. One may be tempted to ask as to why a strategic plan? Why do we have a strategic plan? The strategic plan of the Ministry of Rural Development serves as and must be a management tool for the Ministry, gift as strategically directing, monitoring, and evaluating of its overall performance. In order to discharge its mandate in line with the government's expressed strategic objectives regarding sub-national governments in order to make meaningful contribution towards the achievement of Vision 2030 and NDP6. It's only 4 years remaining before reaching the year 2030, upon which Vision 2030 was crafted and launched by His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa, our founding father, may his soul rest in eternal peace, in June 2004. This vision had a clear understanding that it was and still remains a vision that would and will take Namibia from the present into the future. And we must remember, the future is not a place you are going to. The future is a place you are creating today. That determines where you were. Because where you are going to stay in your old age is determined by where you stood in the young person. So therefore, Vision 2030 has to look into the future by reflecting where are we and where have we been. His Excellency President Somnoma stated, a vision that will guide us to make deliberate efforts to improve the quality of life of our people to the level of their counterparts in developed world by the year 2030. The Ministry has in the past 35 years been crafting strategic plans, but what has come out of such plans? Have such plans achieved the desired results? This is critical for us to understand. Because a vision is important to the extent that even the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, says where there is no vision, people perish. Then check that in the book of Proverbs. I want to quote from the Vision 2030 document, page 30. One shortcoming in these plans is that they tend to address immediate needs. A road, a clinic, a water point. What is missing in the process is the long-term vision towards which each five-year plan should be working, including both long-term components that are needed to build a prosperous, productive, and sustainable society. We should not be short-sighted. As a ministry staff member, let us critically examine ourselves against the stated objective of Vision 2030. That by 2030, Namibia shall be a prosperous or industrial Namibia, developed by a human resource, enjoying peace, harmony, and political stability. Does this strategic plan have a score point on the promotion of industrialization? The plan that we are launching today, does it have a score point about industrialization? Because it must fit into Vision 2030. Industrialization our regional and local authorities. Director of Proceedings. The Minister of Urban Rural Development derives its mandate from the Constitution of the Republic of Namibia, particular section, Article 32.3G, which trusts the government with the responsibility to promote and ensure effective governance and development across the country. In this regard, the Minister is responsible for formulating, coordinating, and ensuring appropriate policy, legal, regulatory, and institutional frameworks, as well as support mechanisms for effective and sustainable urban and rural development in Namibia. Our work is therefore central to the strengthening system of subnational government, which subnational governments are not represented in this workshop today. Our subnational government consists of 14 political administrative regions, 121 constituencies, 59 local authorities, 7 settlements, and 53 recognized traditional authorities. Through these institutions, government services are brought closer to the people. So these institutions become the main players in the implementation of the plan. And at the developmental stage, these institutions must be involved when the plan of the ministry is being formulated. Because in such a way, they will have an appreciation that indeed the plan is representative. Because the moment I explode it, it will create a situation of them and us situation, which is not good for development. The strategic plan we are launching today is guided by a clear vision. That's to be the leading institution in ensuring effective governance and sustainable urban and rural development. What is a vision and why a vision? What is a vision and why a vision? A vision is a mental image of a possible and desirable future for an individual or for the organization that articulates a view of a realistic, credible, attractive future for an individual and organization, a condition that is better in some important ways than what now exists. In other words, for a strategic plan to be achieved, we must have a vision. And the vision requires us to have pregnant minds. Because without pregnancy, there is no delivery. So a human mind, the minds of the staff members, the minds of the leadership must be pregnant of what should be delivered in the future. Because that is the mental image that we require. Against this background, the ministry's vision should reflect our aspirations to build a Namibia where regional local authorities are strong, accountable, and capable of delivering services efficiently to the customers, to the citizens of this country, while fostering sustainable economic growth and the community development. In pursuit of this vision, the ministry now develops a mission. Why does this ministry exist? If the vision is for development of rural areas, is for development of urban areas, is for the strengthening of local authorities, what is the purpose of the ministry? Is to provide the requisite policy, legal, regulatory, and financial support for effective regional and local governance and development. Our mission is the very reason why this ministry exists. And if we cannot understand the reason why we exist, then we fail to answer the question, why were you born? As a person, why are you in this ministry? This mission underscores our role as both a policy leader and an enabler, supporting regional councils, local authorities, and traditional officials in carrying out their responsibilities to the citizens as they serve the commercial trade. Director of Proceedings, ladies and gentlemen, the strategic plan is aligned with key national and international frameworks, including Vision 2030, the National Development Plan, NDP6, the Decentralization Policy, the Rural Development Policy, the National Housing Policy, and the Sustainable Development Goals, backed by the relevant legislation that Namibia is able to craft. These framework is ready to guide Namibia's long-term development agenda and ensures that our strategic priorities remain consistent with national aspirations for prosperity, equity, and sustainable development. Over the next 5 years, the ministry will focus on several strategic objectives and programs aimed at transforming urban and rural landscape in Namibia. Thus, regional and local authorities become the strongest partners in this strategic plan has to achieve what it aims to achieve. First, we will strengthen the regional and local governance systems, starting with the current and recently conducted induction training for all newly elected councillors and their management staff. Strengthening regional and local governance aims at enhancing institutional capacity, improving financial management, and promoting accountability and transparent leadership at regional and local levels. Because it's very, very important that there has to be accountability for all the actions that all of us take and all the decisions that we make. Without accountability, governance becomes a casualty. Therefore, in addition, the ministry will continue to advance decentralization to an extent that for too long we have sung about decentralization, but we have not achieved much. Because there is a problem either of implementation or the will to implement. By progressively devolving functions and the resources to regional and local authorities, we aim to empower communities to actively shape their own development trajectories. We have to be determined to accelerate sustainable development and spatial planning. Rapid urbanization, which is both a plus and a negative for our survival in Namibia, places pressure on the housing, infrastructure, and the land management systems in local authorities. Through effective implementation of the urban regional planning framework, will promote orderly urban growth and improved land use planning. Will enhance land delivery and housing development, particularly through the implementation of policies such as flexible land tenure system and other innovative approaches that improve access to affordable land and housing for low and middle income households. It's against this principle that land allocation had policy has to be revisited and has been revisited. Alternative building methodologies to the current conventional brick and mortar buildings has to be introduced so that we can accommodate the majority of our people that are languishing in informal settlements. Ladies and gentlemen, successful implementation of this strategic plan will require strong collaboration between all departments of the ministry, various role players across all spheres of government, and with all stakeholders. Regional council, local authorities, traditional leaders, development partners, civil society, and the private sector all have got a role to play in the achievement of this strategic plan. I therefore call upon all stakeholders to embrace this strategic plan as a shared roadmap for development. Let us work together to strengthen the governance, accelerate service delivery, and ensure that development benefits every Namibian. As we embark on the implementation of this strategic plan, we remain guided by the principles of accountability, transparency, inclusivity, and sustainability. Inclusivity requires one Namibia, one nation, not one Namibia, many nations. These values will shape our programs, inform our partnership, and ensure that public resources are utilized responsibly to deliver meaningful results. Excellency President Nandi Ndaitwa stated, we are too few to be poor. So the resources must be used as guided by the strategic plan. In conclusion, the strategic plan for 2025-26, 2029-30 represents a bold and forward-looking framework that will guide the ministry in ability to support regional governance and to promote balanced development across. In terms of this approach, I, as the political head of this ministry, entrusted with my duties in terms of Articles 40 and 41 of the Constitution, together with Article 37, that brings in on board the Honorable Deputy Minister and CCO. If you're going to read those articles, Article 37 is quite clear. What is the duty of a deputy minister? It's similar to the minister. Therefore, I will not, as I repeat, I will not remain a ribbon-cutting minister. I will not be there for ribbon-cutting. Mm-hmm. We shall operate together and make sure that there is proper governance and accountability in the ministry.
And that was Minister of Urban and Rural Development, James Sankwasa, speaking today at the strategic plan or ministerial strategic plan launch for 2025-2026, 2029-2030. Now, of course, he talks about local governance, which comes in and that it say, he says it must be strengthened as regional and rural authorities are strong. When they're made strong, they should be made strong in order to deliver services effectively to the citizens of our country. They then become the strongest partners in this strategic plane, he says. Because at the end of the day, it needs to be decentralized so that we can actually be able, if we're going to meet the people in the community, we're going to say, no Namibian should be left out. We'll then have obviously to start at grassroots level. And I really appreciate how he's, underscoring how regional and rural authorities are of utmost importance. And if we can trace on how the minister has, started off in his ministry, I think he really started off at grassroots level. And I think I get the picture to say perhaps that is how he really wants to go. Because at the end of the day, if you want to reach the masses, you have to go to grassroots level. Because we've, for a very long time, I think it has been so much, about urban and developing urban communities, forgetting our grassroots level, where all of us, most of us actually come from. But at the end of the day, when you do develop a certain community, you have developed even those who are in the urban areas, because they then make use also go back home to their local and regional places. Now, he does speak about the future is not a place where one is now, but rather the future is about planning of where you are going. And at the end of the day, the future will be determined by the actions that we do take now. And that for a very long time, we've been talking about strategic plans. And I think he's referring to the ministry has been talking about strategic plans, but we need to also critically analyze what are those achievements that have been achieved from the many strategic plans that have been implemented. So he does speak about improving financial management at regional level and local levels and other obviously levels, and accountability then comes in. We must be accountable, or they must be accountable for all their actions. Without governance, a country obviously becomes then a casualty. That's what he says. So at the end of the day, they have to be accountable and there has to be transparency. He did also speak about different ways or other areas, or other planes, or perhaps lack of better word, perhaps obviously the ministry will look at in terms of not just reducing it to brick and mortar, that is brick houses only, whereby the government only comes in to play its role in brick houses, but rather they will have to look at other areas or other ways also to be able to have the citizens of Namibia to have land, and of course to have a conducive environments to stay in, rather than this, you know, kabashus that are filling a lot of urban areas now. Of course, there needs to be some sort of solutions, because at the end of the day, really, we can't just be focused on one particular area as if there is no other opportunities or perhaps no other materials that we can make better living conditions that are more affordable. And I think we're noticing that now, that, you know, this government is rising up or opening up its eyes to say we can't just reduce it to brick and mortar. We have to explore other avenues or other areas that are able to cater for the citizens of Namibia. But nonetheless, let's pause right here. This is a commercial break. We'll be back shortly. So celebrate Namibia's freedom with the best price match now at ShopRite stores. 4 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions, only 199.99 Namibian dollars. 10 kilos champion super maize meal at 104.99 Namibian dollars. 3 kilograms Polana pasta, 74.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilograms marathon white sugar, 92.99 Namibian dollars. A large tin of Ri coffee, 169.99 Namibian dollars. ShopRite, buying bulk so you can save and enjoy this Independence weekend.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo, iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM, otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo, otukwetira o special ange. Tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa, nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe, bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, omafilane Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now joining us in studio telephonically is Oshana Governor, that is Mr. Ofeni Ipinge. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis yet again.
Yes, good day, and thank you very much for having me.
Mm. Of course, we're talking about the ministerial strategic plan or launch of the strategic plan for 2025/2026/2029/2030 by the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, which is your line ministry. And the Minister Sankwasa James Sankwasa spoke about many, of course, key aspects that they do plan to achieve within this ministerial strategic plan. Now, one thing I would want us to talk about, Governor, is he spoke about regional and rural authorities being the strongest partner in actually achieving this ministerial goals, that is obviously getting them to a place where they are able to deliver services effectively to the citizens of the country. Now, the question comes in to see, how do you think rural development or perhaps regional and rural constituencies or authorities can actually play their part in helping any ministry to achieve its strategic goals?
Yeah, thank you very much. When we talk of stakeholder inclusion in any state decision, it's for all of us, whether it's a tradition or government, to work hand in hand so that we can be able to see how can we improve the livelihood of our people, especially those one who are living in peri-urban areas and also in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
They are mostly the ones that are affected by poor sanitation, poor houses or lack of houses, and also poor services. So those are the most people that we are intentionally looking at, so that we can see, looking at now priority number 7, how can we improve housing and sanitation for our people and also respond to the National Development Plan of 2025-2030. So that's a long-term vision that we need to look into, that we need to design proper consultation, that we need to speak as one house, that we need to address as one Namibia, one nation, that need all our involvement as stakeholders and also as government to assist each other and able to carry hands with each other. Because when we are developing peri-urban or also rural development, it's not a one-man show. It needs two parties to come together and understand each other. You know, many people in the local authority, they are finding it so difficult, especially to extend the urban area, take part of the rural villages to service it and also make it part of the urban area. So they are experiencing difficulties in compensation, moving people from one place to another. It's a discussion that needs really equal understanding within our people. And also the budget allocation needs also to speak to the needs of the people. If you want to deliver really service, we need, everything in this world now, wherever you are going, you need to have money available. Right. Money can make everything possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you have money, if you have, but all they will bring all the two parties together and discuss in detail and understand each other, it will be very, very easy for the government to carry out its vision from 2025 to 2030. That is a 5-year plan.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Now, the minister also spoke about, in order to achieve those goals, he says it requires for us to have a pregnant minds, because it's when you're pregnant that you can deliver. Now, I understand this to mean that those in the ministerial sector, those at regional and rural authorities, have to have a mindset that is able to come up with solutions. I mean, when you are on the ground, you are perhaps in a particular position when you're employed, if you're really into what you're doing, if your mind and heart and soul is really put out into what you're doing, I understand that thoughts or ideas will really be coming to your mind to say, I think this is what I can do to enhance. I think this is the area that I can play my part in order to actually enhance service delivery to the local people. What do you actually think about that? Because I think and not to be actually negative, but when it comes to ministerial staff, I think they're very reluctant. They're not really thinking out of the box to actually deliver solutions efficiently for the service delivery of the Namibian people. What do you think?
Yeah, we have a national development goals. We have got NDP-6 that is addressing all the needs. We have got the vision, presidential vision is there. And we have got also human capital that are also in position to deliver and also implement what the government is asking. All what we need to do is to have the positive mindset, all of us, and also explore more avenues and with the same understanding that we are here to develop or deliver service to our people. But the problem we have also with technocrats, it's that maybe they are also being forced because of the Procurement Act, which is making everything to be difficult. Sometimes with efficient policies are there in place, proper policies, very clear. The national development stipulate everything clearly. and you end up with the local government sending back money to treasury without implementing the capital project that is supposed to be implemented within the framework of that budget.
Yeah.
But you end up seeing that the money is going back to treasury without the implementing what it was intended for. That is the problem. We need to relax our Procurement Act. Sometimes we are making things difficult for ourselves. Some of the things we need to review our act, and so that it can be able to speak in the best interest of the people, and that will now make it work easier for those technocrats to implement and deliver quality service to the intended families. So if we come up with such a, maybe we can ask some of them to have some exemption from the Procurement Act, at least the process will be very fast. But these things of, a Procurement Act, you have to follow the normal Procurement Act, set up. It really delays the service delivery to our people, and is very frustrating, and it has a lot of cons and plans under it. And we really need to think of that, and we have really to start there so that we can be able to move. Otherwise, we cannot move because we are we are tightening ourselves up. But it's ourselves to come up with ideas on how to relate some of those, the Procurement Act, which is making everything very difficult.
Governor, you speak about a very interesting point right there about some leaders, obviously, money going back to Treasury when there are projects at hand and people who are in need and services that need to be delivered to the people. I think I want to ask a question to say, what happens to those leaders who fail to implement projects or to execute projects that would have been beneficial to even rural people or people in the regional areas? And are there perhaps any consequences that follows after that, or they are just it just becomes something that is not sorted out?
Yes, consequences are supposed to be there, but they have to be measured. Where does it started? That is where we need to start, because sometimes the money is allocated, either people, they don't know how to get that money and implement them. Because sometimes you can go to the, to the government officials, but they can say, okay, for example, Oshana is budgeted or earmarked for how many millions, but that money does not mean that they are not in your account, but they are earmarked for the MTF. So therefore, that money is just, it is a revenue of government, and it just in the, it's in the same pot there. So it's up to you to request as the head of institutions of that specific ministry or agencies to request for that fund so that you can be able to implement that capital project that is earmarked for that financial year within your region. But you can find some people are sitting reluctantly that, no, we are waiting for the minister to say A, B, C, D. And I said, it's not about the minister, because the money was earmarked for your region.
Yes.
Project of your region, it's up to you to request that fund if you need it. If you are not requesting it, then that money is not yours, it belongs to the state, and with the power invested in the minister, she have got the right to reallocate that money to whoever regions they might need that money, because that money is just in the coffer of the government. But if you need it, because it was earmarked for you, then you hear it's up to you now to request that fund. Some people, they came up, out clearly complaining about the functions that are not decentralized to the regional council. Apparently, those functions which are not decentralized to the regional councils, they find it so difficult to request for that fund. Sometimes the request for that fund, apparently, at the ministry, especially the ministry which are not the one that are not decentralized.
Yeah, Governor,
we find so difficult.
Governor, so sorry. Pause for me right there for now.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Governor?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. Pardon me. We had a scheduled commercial break coming up. Yeah, you were busy speaking about how people also having their complaints.
Some, you can see some government officials are complaining that no, especially the ministries which are not, which functions are not, which are not decentralized.
Mm.
So they finding it so difficult to get hold of that money and make use of it. They can request and request and request, but apparently nothing is coming out. I don't know how true it is. I wrote letter with me, the governor of Oshana, at least I made sure that I set up what we call a quarterly report, whereby heads of institutions have to report to me every quarter. So the, especially the ministries, which functions are delegated to the regional council. I want to know how much do we spend, what do we implement, what are the challenges, and also what are the achievements, and now balance, looking at what was budgeted for my region, what did we committed, what did we implement. What happened to this project that was earmarked for this financial year, but is not implemented, even the paperwork did not start, what happened? But you can hear a lot of complaints, but mostly it's mostly to the ministries that are functions are not delegated to the regional council.
Mm.
Because now the colleagues maybe that are now, they are finding it so difficult when they are requesting for that fund. It seems like the fund is, seems like it's allocated to the MTF, but in the but there's nothing actually. It's actually what they've been telling me. So then from there I have now to request to the National Planning Commission, because they are the head, to ask, why is this, can you please ask this ministry, what happened to this project in my region which was budgeted and supposed to be implemented in within the financial, within this financial year, what happened? Yeah, so those are the questions that we need to ask each other, and I think it's good there's a commission that is set up to make sure that, to look into, implementations of most of the capital project, monitoring and implementation, very, very important, because we need to monitor what the ministries are implementing. Are we really implementing what we budgeted for, or we are just budgeting for the sake of submitting the budget, then we run away from our responsibility, or do we really mean it? Because at the end of the day, the people that are suffering are the people that are on the grassroots level.
Absolutely.
And they are not interested in our excuses. They want to see results, and they want to see tangible results coming to them, because they have got very high expectations. Because we promised to them that through this swap manifestos of 2025 and 2030, which is now translated in the National Development Plan, with the budget of 85 billion, this is what we are going to achieve, and this is what we are going to implement within the 5 years time. And we are accountable to the Namibian people to report back.
Mm.
And we don't want to go and report back results under 50. We want to score at least an A. If we could not get an 100%, we could at least get 80 or 90, if not 90%. At least it's understandable if we cannot implement 100% because of maybe challenges here and there. But we cannot underscore under 50. That is that is unbelievable. We cannot we cannot do that. We really have to work very hard, as our president is always saying, let's work for our people, let's implement the project, and sometimes we should request for the exemption from the procurement, because there's a lot of bureaucracy within the government, and some people are doing it deliberately, and you know, there are those who are doing it deliberately to fail the aid administration. But to us, we are not going to allow that. We are not going to allow that, because we have to make sure that we implement what we promised to our people.
Indeed.
And we need to have hands on day and night to make sure that at least half of or more than 80% of our manifesto is implemented within the 5 years plan.
Now, Governor, you highlight very important critical points right there. I think, especially also in terms of, I came to find out last year, particular councillor's office, whereby councillors, I now learned that councillors are also given allocated money for certain projects such as community development. That is, in layman's terminology, let me put it to say, some community members can, or all community members can apply at their councillor and any councillor's office to say, perhaps I want to start my tuck shop in order to bring bread on the table for my children, and the next person perhaps maybe is a builder or that kind of stuff. Certain projects like that. But I came to pick up a certain councillor's office that did not implement it for Samuela Michelle last year, but it was rather diverted to something else. And that I found out this when John Pandeni councillor's office was handing out this equipment to their people who within their jurisdiction. Now, I now get to a point as you're speaking now, I pick up a certain point where I think we are perhaps reluctant in punishing or bringing to accountability those who actually do not implement that which is tasked to them, because at the end of the day, it is the community people who suffer. It is us, the citizen people, who don't benefit from what was actually rightfully ours in the beginning.
That is not going to happen in my region. I don't want to speak on behalf of other regions, but in my region, I will never allow that. Because myself, as a political head in Oshana region, I went through all the 11 constituencies. And when I go to the 11 constituencies, at least I have to work together with the respective councillor. And I'm not only going to hear from the councillor of that respective constituency, I want the councillor to invite the members of the community so that I can engage them. I want to hear the challenges, what are the problems, where can we improve, how can the central government intervene, how can we come in, what is happening there. And I even ask up to the food for the
for donation.
I don't want to hear food getting rotten in any storeroom while people are suffering from hunger. So we have to make sure that we serve or we give top-notch service to our people that put us where we are. We are not in the offices to sit. We are not in the offices to be bosses. We are in the offices to serve the people on the ground, and also at the central government. If you are at the constituency level and you have challenges, please feel free to come to the office. This office in Oshana represents the head of state. So we should bring all the challenges to this office. If you are unable to
deliver, maybe
to deliver or to assist your office, you are in semi, is unable to assist, please don't sit with community problems. Bring the problems here so that I can see how I can deal with them. So because service has to start from up, down, everybody should at least benefit. Because our theme is saying unity in diversity, natural resources, beneficiation for youth empowerment, sustainable development. So all of us, the Namibian economy belongs to the Namibian people, Namibian resources belong to the Namibian people, therefore each and every person within the 3 million of the population of our country should at least get a small cake and at least have a taste of the Namibian resources.
Okay.
Because the Namibian resources belongs to us directly and indirectly, wherever you find yourself, whether the state paid for you as a school, whether your brother is working there, paid for your sister, at least the bread that is coming in the house is benefiting everyone, and the government has put hands on to make sure that all the households have been taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I said also, I don't want to hear any community suffering from water drought in my region. I went deep there in some constituencies where we are busy now putting some pipes so that people cannot walk more than 10 kilometers with donkey cattle to go and fetch water. So we have water, we have pipes, and I said I don't want to see any pipes at the councillors just idling there. So for all the pipes should go in the field and be at least and get utilized,
mm-hmm,
to take water near to the people. That's why we talk of decentralization. That's why we said government offices are in the regions, and they are in the regions to give service to the people. That's why those offices, they came closer to the people to make sure that they serve the people and the people benefit from what they're supposed to get,
mm-hmm,
their share from, mm-hmm, the government. That is not going to happen in the 8th administration, and we should discourage whoever is not really having the heart of the Namibian people should be discouraged. And if you don't have the heart of the Namibian people, just make sure that, or know that you are at the wrong place, and you are not saving in the best interest of our people. We should save in the best interest of our people,
yeah,
and our people should not suffer because of us.
Indeed.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. Very strong point right there, Governor. Governor Hofuni Ipenge, thank you so much for making time for us right here and helping us also to discuss further and break down and analyze this launch of the Ministerial Strategic Plan by the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you and have a good day.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Now, some takeaway points that I make, that I take away from, as the governor spoke to us, is the fact that I think, it's about time we really hold accountable to those who are tasked with certain, projects that they're supposed to carry out for the beneficiation of the Namibian people, and they don't do it. Because it is a common saying, and I think it's really easy to identify or speak about it when we talk about our government needs to play its part. And it's not just our government. It is our aunties, our uncles, our sisters, our brothers who are working in the ministry and sitting and not really implementing what is supposed to be implemented. So it's about time that we all play our part in ensuring that projects that are earmarked for the people are actualize and so that the people can benefit from them. At the end of the day, we're not doing it only for the people, but we are doing it for ourselves as well. But there is definitely a need to hold accountable those who are in office and not implementing that which they have been tasked to implement. Nonetheless, this is On The Reading News Analysis. Let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with economic indicators and news beyond the borders of Namibia. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Should you want to share an opinion or a contribution, 083-288-401.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm,
and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete oku.
Esira shisho, pagyotari kukwathere opovoro kara uwasira ya kweni o chisho. Watu chitana Basic Mental Health First Aid Course. Haiganjwa o shari chamhongi kwa mboka ili iyo, iyo NHP. Watapewa unongo nonseo na kene una okutongorora o madidiriko ugo petameko yena cha nupiakadhi nenge o mafidakano gopama viraviro kuchane omokatiko kumekoe nenge anironga pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo kene una okuya kwathera nukuya pa ea bidhido yiri mwonjira omanga upya kadiboka inauru darara kuyerere o unji na kene unokara uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na e pangono maradura thano odovina okurandurwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Atera ulikoni maondo tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nweko, tete opoye ekukuri.
Welcome back, and now for economic indicators. Let's start off with the US dollar in comparison to the Namibian dollar. Now, one US dollar today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars point 68 cents. 1 euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars point 25 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 84 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 20 cents, while 1 Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 42 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 23 cents. And now let's head over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. As you know by now, we always start off regionally and then move over to continental news. Thereafter, some international news. Now let's start off in South Africa as they're speaking about their first innovation
week. From one gathering to another, the Science, Technology and Innovation Department is today hosting the inaugural SA Innovation Week. This event is taking place at the Nasrec Expo Center in Johannesburg, and it brings together innovators, investors, corporates, researchers, policymakers, as well as those who are going to be involved in dialogues and solution-driven workshops. Innovation Week also looks to highlight locally developed technologies. Let's break this all down for you with SABC News reporter Katlego Lekgodi, who's live to us now from Nasrec in Johannesburg. And Katlego, it's a mouthful. There are so many issues that I imagine those who are attending Innovation Week are hoping to ventilate. Help us distill through some of those main points and why this is so important.
A very good morning to you, Ayanda, and to our viewers at home. You find us this morning on day three, actually. And the reason why we are saying this is day three of this Innovation Week is because earlier on in the week, Monday, Tuesday, we saw this event, just the provinces pushing through with activations leading to where you find us today at the Nasrec Expo Center. You're right, a variety of issues expected to come under the spotlight. You know very well that we are living in an era of artificial intelligence, and there's cutthroat technology that will be showcased here today, of course, hosted by the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology, talking about a theme of connect, innovate and transform. And we see various of those role players, researchers, they are here, academics, they are here, but also innovators, really just looking to showcase some of their innovations as they speak to solutions, looking at fintech, looking at health tech, and some of the innovations that will come through in strengthening the country's economy. I'm going to bring into the conversation our keynote speaker for this particular day. This will be the Deputy Minister for Science, Innovation and Technology, Nomalungelo Gina, who'll just give us a sense of how we find ourselves here. How are we doing in South Africa where technology is concerned? We know very well that there are various of those innovations that we'll be showcasing throughout the day. But where are we, and how important is it that we really move forward, stream forward with the issue of technology in mind? Welcome to the SABCDM.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We are excited to be here today. This is a very important week for our country, more especially for the national innovation system, the NSI, that you are talking about as a country, to say how do we bring forward technologies, innovation, research and development, how do we bring together all these role players. But above it all, what we are here for this week, as we are saying, is the South African Nation Innovation Week. Specifically today, as we are saying, is to make sure that we showcase our capabilities as a country, that when it comes to innovation, there's so much that we can do. Hence today, you will see where we have brought together the academia, the industry, government, and also the very important part is the communities, because this is the place where we are saying, where do we come together, bring together the resources and a variety of the role players and stakeholders. We've got funders in the like of what we offer as government when it comes to funding opportunities, the NEFs, the IDCs, you know, so that when this innovation, when these innovators come up with their prototypes, they're coming up with their own innovations. The things that we always say, let those innovations translate to economy, translate to economic growth, go to be commercialized. We are talking about entrepreneurs that are here. So how do we even scale up the innovation that they are coming up with? And without all these role players that are here today, without the funders, without the industry, we will be sitting under one roof and say, what best do we do to improve innovation from within our country? And also the industry, the important parts that they need to play. When it comes to the issue of R&D, there is a lot of investment that is needed there. And what it helps us is that let us not rely on foreign R&D that we are having. Let's invest on what we have so that we showcase our own capabilities as a country. Let's grow our own timber within the country, because it will be one of other discussions as to say, how do we even grow on the investment part when it comes to R&D, so that we make sure that we level the playing field and we make the conditions conducive for these innovators to continue innovate. But also what is important is to look at the IP League. Let them innovate. Let's take up what they have innovated. They are prototypes. Let's scale them up so that we don't end up with those IPs, with those good minds and ideas, having innovated something that is just a waste in our country, while we depend on the external innovators.
I know we have to let you go so you can deliver the keynote address, but just give us a sense as well of how do we see some of these issues helping you as a government to resolve some of the issues. I mean, we have climate change that is playing itself out. We are just talking about the National Transport Week that is playing itself out, the innovations there as well. But also we are looking at issues of cybersecurity. How do we ensure that some of these innovations as well are guarded? Just briefly, DM, before we let you go, how do we see all of these issues helping you as government and as a country to resolve some of these complex issues?
Yes, as we are saying, innovation, these researchers, they are solely for that, as to say, how do we bring solutions to the challenges that we are faced with as a country? And for us, we always say, when it comes Karen, to the research, over. When it comes to innovation, we cut across all the sectors. As we are saying, transport is holding theirs, but at the fundamental and the important part is to say, how do we come together and say, how best do we resolve those challenges? When it comes to issues of cybersecurity, we get innovators that come up with ideas as to say, how do we protect? Because it's a fact, the whole country, the government, we need to move towards digitization. We need to move towards, we are talking of AI now, everything has changed. So definitely, this is the conference, this is the gathering, these are the people that are here to showcase that we've got what it takes, we've got what we need. As a country, these are our assets, and we need to create this platform for them to showcase what they can offer for the country.
DM, everything of the best, and thank you very much for joining us on the SABC. The Deputy Minister for Science, Innovation and Technology, Nomalungelo Gina, just giving us a sense of where we find ourselves as a country right now, where our capabilities are concerned. Ayanda, you often hear people saying that we are lagging behind as a continent, but you hear the DM saying they are looking at streamlining some of these innovations so that they work for us as a country and a continent as well. Ayanda, it's back to you in studio for now.
Katego Lehodi is live to us from the ESO Innovation Week, which is being held.
Meanwhile, democratic shortcomings are said to obstruct electoral progress.
27.7 million people in South Africa registered to vote, but fewer than 17 million of them voted in the last elections. Every election, the IEC encourages young people to register and vote, but the numbers are not yet satisfactory. The electoral body has been tracking voting patterns, especially among the youth, for over 2.5 decades. And the findings of its research will be shared with political parties on Wednesday.
We do engage political parties. We will be, in fact, sharing with them the research that has been done and what the aggregate position of young people is in terms of participating in the elections. We are also participating in the Interministerial Committee on Elections, and we share with them this research and the implications of this research for voter participation, so that government as a whole understands what the voters are saying.
In the 2024 polls, only 48% of young people between 18 and 29 voted, while 82% of those between the ages of 70 and 79 cast their votes in the same elections. The IEC found that developments in the country discourage young people from participating in the electoral process.
They do not participate not because of apathy, because they harbor some misgivings about some of the things that are happening in the country. They increasingly tell us that they are not registered not because there are administrative barriers to their registration, but because of developments in the body politic. By all means, we remain invested in ensuring that we engage with young persons, we increase their representation on the voters' roll. However, that must be matched by the performance of democracy. In other words, what is the dividend of participation in a democratic system? Until there's congruence between those two, the rate of participation will unfortunately continue to be on the decline.
But the IEC is not giving up.
There has to be hope always, because if we were to throw our hands in the air, that will spell a disaster for the democratic project of the country. We can't throw hands. We've got to systematically work with constituencies that are less inclined to participate, hear them out, and try to respond within the scope of our constitutional and statutory mandate.
The IEC will hold its first voter registration weekend ahead of the local government elections on the 20th and 21st of June. Ntebo Mokobo for SABC News in Johannesburg.
And now for some medically good news. Two conjoined twin boys were successfully separated, that is, in South Africa.
Twins were born joined at the abdomen and chest in January. Specialist doctors at Mangweng Hospital immediately started planning a surgical operation to separate them. Pediatric surgeon Dr. Nyaweleni Chifularo led a team of specialist doctors and nurses who ensured the safety of the babies during the operation.
Once the baby was stabilized, then we went on to do different investigation to see how are they joined, where are they joined. So we set up a multidisciplinary team composed of the pediatrician, the ones that are looking after the patients, the surgeons, the ones who are going to divide them, the plastic surgeons, the ones that are going to make sure that the closure is perfect, the anesthetist, the one that will make the baby sleep so that when you operate, it's easy for us.
The operation, which started on Tuesday morning, lasted for 8 hours.
7:45 we started, and then by 3:10 we were done. I think that takes us about, 8 hours? 8 hours. It took us 8 hours. The babies were joined, the trunk, meaning the body. There were organs that were joined. We had to separate and make them share, and that is a complex surgery, but we delivered. We are very excited about it.
This marks the first successful medical procedure of its kind that was conducted in a rural Limpopo hospital.
This operation represents a historic moment for Limpopo MEC. For the first time in South Africa, a rural hospital has accomplished such a high-scale operation. This achievement changes the landscape of healthcare in our province and reaffirms our belief in the potential of rural hospitals.
President Cyril Ramaphosa has also congratulated the team behind the historic operation.
We thank you for having succeeded in doing this unbelievable, complicated and difficult operation. One thing is, I will never be a doctor, but I'm a doctor by marriage. And I can just imagine how difficult the operation was. So I congratulate all of you, and the nation is filled with pride.
The twins are now stable while being monitored after the operation. Katlego Nyoni, SABC News, Mankweng.
Interesting. It's quite interesting when we talk about procedures such as this one of conjoined twins being successfully separated, and this happening right in South Africa. It's wonderful. Now, the twins were delivered by a 29-year-old mother, was transferred to the hospital. Indeed, as you have heard there, President Cyril Ramaphosa have praised the team of surgeons who were led by pediatric surgeon Dr. Nyaweleni Shifulalo. It can be quite complicated and quite delicate when such procedures happen. But nonetheless, it was successful, so we're grateful for that. Now let's move on. In other news, TikTok's economic value drives Kenya's decision to reject ban.
In the digital age, social media is shaping how Kenyans communicate, create, and earn. However, as platforms continue to grow in popularity, questions are emerging about safety, culture, and regulation. Kenyan legislators recently rejected calls to ban TikTok, instead opting for tighter regulation.
Madam Speaker, it also has provided employment for quite a number of Kenyans. For a long time, I didn't understand that. I'm very happy I was saying, sharing it elsewhere, that have actually contributed a lot to employment, because I am caricatured a lot on TikTok. And at one, before I understood actually how it operated, I would call people and say, oh, I just want to thank you very much because you have promoted me. They said, Millie, they are making money off you.
A petition filed in 2023 urged a ban, citing exposure of young users to harmful content.
In my view, I felt like it was a bit an overreach. A lot of content creators tend to use TikTok not only for their own network and socializing, but also it's a very big market opportunity for people to promote their businesses. So I was totally against it.
Legislators directed the Ministry of Interior and Ministry of Information, Communication and Digital Economy to develop stronger cybersecurity and age verification systems. Kenya, one of Africa's most social media savvy nations, has seen mixed reactions. Many content creators argue that regulation should protect users without limiting creativity, entrepreneurship, or freedom of expression. Beyond risks, social media has become a powerful economic tool. Kenyan creators use digital platforms to market businesses, promote culture, and create employment opportunities.
Around 2 or 3 years ago, I think Kenya was listed as the biggest user of TikTok within Africa. It is an important information tool and system to be able to not only promote their views, but also their business. So indeed, with the fact that we have very scarce job opportunities, there's been a market which has been opened in terms of content creation. And we find, especially in the current landscape, content creation has become a good way, or even promoting knowledge in terms of the constitution, in terms of the rights of the accused person. As a lawyer, I actually disseminate legal information on TikTok.
Through the social media apps like Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, I'm able to get more clients, but through the influencer. Because I tend to think like, if she was not there advertising me there online, I couldn't get so many clients.
Nigeria's exporters eye China with tariffs set to drop.
Years, Oluwani Femi Oyebanji has spilled her business sourcing, processing, packaging, and exporting African food products to overseas markets. Her shipments regularly go to the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and India. China, however, remains a small part of her export portfolio for now. With trade dynamics shifting and new tariff policies on the horizon, she's positioning to expand into the Chinese market.
I began seriously considering China as a potential market within about a year or two, as global trade dynamics began to shift and you can see a lot of China fairs here and there. And the recent policy discussions around the tariff reductions too have made the Chinese market very attractive for exporters like us, especially like myself.
China says it will eliminate tariffs on selected African agricultural and mineral products starting May 1. For Nigerian exporters of sesame, cocoa, oil seeds, tiger nuts, and processed foods, the zero-duty window could significantly reduce entry costs and improve competitiveness. Trade data already points to changing patterns. Nigeria's export to the United States declined 14% in 2025, with more than 90% still energy-related. At the same time, Nigeria's export to China jumped 44% year-on-year, driven largely by petroleum gas and solid minerals shipments. Trade analyst Nnemeka Obiariri says Nigeria must use the moment to rebalance its export structure.
Nigeria can actually do more in the area of non-oil export than oil export. Today, most of our exports are skewed towards crude oil and non-oil export, which is not supposed to be so.
The timing adds urgency. The African Growth and Opportunity Act, which grants many African goods duty-free access to the U.S. market, is scheduled to expire in December 2026, pushing exporters to diversify destinations and rethink long-term trade strategy.
If we get it right, we can actually do nothing less than $100 billion export to China or from the agro value chain every year, delivering on this tariff-free export window. But we need to be intentional, we need to be very scientific, and we need to mechanize and drive it through technology and the right production and processing.
With tariff barriers easing and traditional trade routes facing uncertainty, trade experts say the real test is whether Nigerian producers can meet global standards and scale fast enough to compete. And exporters would now be looking to review orders and shipping plans, preparing for what they hope will become a stronger presence in the Chinese markets. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Zambia moves towards a 24-hour business operation.
A new chapter in the nation's economic story is beginning to unfold as Zambia boldly steps into a transformative era, the shift towards a 24-hour economy. For decades, economic activity in the country has largely followed the traditional daytime cycle. However, today marks a significant milestone as government spokesperson Cornelius Mwetwa unveiled a series of cabinet resolutions aimed at turning this vision into a reality. This was revealed on the sidelines of the IBM media training in Choma.
The establishment of a 24-hour economy presents a transformative opportunity for the country to unlock new avenues of economic growth, employment, and service delivery to our people. The extension of business and operating hours for businesses is premised on the need to maximize productivity, enhance competitiveness, and create inclusive economic opportunities across all sectors of the economy.
The minister also announced that to support this initiative, government will strengthen security systems to ensure businesses and citizens can operate safely at all hours.
Cabinet resolved to deploy sufficient security in all those areas that will be operating 24 hours to ensure that criminal elements do not take advantage of darkness to perform their criminal enterprise. There will be no room for that. And those with such a mindset have been and are hereby forewarned.
He further disclosed the government is considering lifting the nighttime ban on truck movements in a bid to keep the wheels of the economy running.
The nation should also know that cabinet delved into the idea of trucks carrying commerce, that is to say goods and services, that there should be a return of those trucks moving 24/7 non-stop. Because when you stop trucks, you are stopping the motion of the economy. Guidelines on how those trucks will be enjoying that freedom to move 24/7 will be announced soon.
Mr. Moitwa also reaffirmed government's commitment to national development, revealing a major step in the education sector. The approval of the Education Amendment Bill 2026 for publication and introduction in Parliament during the current sitting.
This follows the decision by Cabinet to legislate into law the free education policy put in place by government of the new donor administration of President Hakainde Hichilema, which has become useful to the vulnerable in society. With the implementation of this policy, already 2.6 million learners have returned to class at both primary and secondary school levels.
He also announced the cabinet agreed with President Hakainde Hichilema's decision for government to build a university in Northwestern Province. This initiative will also be extended to five other provinces, Eastern, Lwapula, Northern, Southern and Western.
The cabinet also took cognizance of the need to engage the private sector in the construction of universities across the nation in a public-private partnership arrangement, which this far has already produced resounding tangible results and progress.
Among other legislative matters, Cabinet has approved 38 bills relating to the appointment of members to various boards and committees, which will be published and introduced during the current sitting. Ruth Chainda, ZNBC News, Choma.
Meanwhile, for international news, Iran has confirmed that a key regime leader, Ali Larijani, has been killed in Israeli airstrike.
One of Donald Trump's top counterterrorism officials has resigned over the war in Iran. Joe Kent said it's clear the conflict was started because of pressure from Israel and Iran posed no imminent threat to the U.S. In response, Mr. Trump accused him of being very weak on security. And the president has again lashed out at NATO allies, singling out Keir Starmer, saying America no longer needed help in the war. Well, Sarah Smith is live at the White House for us now. Sarah.
Yeah, officials here are angrily rejecting that accusation that Donald Trump was duped by Israel into declaring war on Iran. They say that is laughable. And they are tearing into Joe Kent, the counterterrorism official, saying that he was kept out of meetings about the Iran war because he was known to be a leaker. They've even called him a crazed egomaniac. But his criticism has struck a chord with many of Donald Trump's own supporters.
a very important topic, especially...
Joe Kent was not the best-known figure in the Trump administration, but he was a true believer who backed the president's policies and even supported his baseless claim that the 2020 election was stolen from him. He had to resign, he says, because the president has abandoned his principle of putting America first. I cannot, in good conscience, support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. This St. Patrick's Day meeting with the Irish Taoiseach was interrupted by questions about Joe Kent's resignation.
When I read a statement, I realized that it's a good thing that he's out, because he said that Iran was not a threat. Iran was a threat. Every country realized what a threat Iran was. The question is whether or not they wanted to do something about it.
The accusation that the U.S. was dragged into this war by Israel seemed to be supported by America's top diplomat at the start of the war.
We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. War
on Iran. A number of popular MAGA influencers are accusing the president of being pushed into this war by Israel.
Our government's job is not to look out for Iran or for Israel. It's to look out for us. And this feels very much to me like it is clearly Israel's war.
It's hard to say this, but the United States didn't make the decision here. Benjamin Netanyahu did.
President Trump reiterated his deep disappointment with NATO allies who he believes have let him down by not joining the war on Iran, especially the UK and Sir Keir Starmer, damaging that long-standing special relationship.
Always was the best until Keir came along, and now, and I like him. He's a nice man. He says everything beautiful. He's a very nice man with a beautiful family. Everything's perfect, but he doesn't produce.
President Trump also posted online that we no longer need or desire the NATO countries' assistance. We never did. By choosing to go to war with Iran without demonstrating an urgent, imminent threat, Donald Trump has alienated allies and is being accused of...
And with that being said, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On The Reader News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program with Loisa Shimi.